back to Shattering Miss. Yesterday, I did my best on my own, by my lonesome, to review where we had been and the profound statements that are found in Bamidbar in the wilderness, Numbers 6:23, which leads then to 6:24, which is where we concluded our program. And we had been over this territory with Kirk now twice before, this being the third time through it. We hadn't made our way all the way to the conclusion of this. And since there are so many profound insights into all of this, I thought it would be wise to go over it again. And this morning, we are joined by Kirk. Welcome. And thank you, by the way, Kirk, for doing such a wonderful job with Scott on the two programs last week.
Scott did a wonderful job. I just hung in there with him. So, yeah. No, seriously. So, just a quick comment. I listened on the archives yesterday.
Yes.
And then this morning, as best I could, as I was getting dressed to go to work afterwards. And I was thinking, people are probably getting tired of this section, but I can't think of after the news for the last 2 hours.
Right.
The first hour of the last 2 days, I mean.
Yes.
I can't imagine anybody not wanting to hear Yahweh Barak Washamar again. I mean, I think you'd want to hear it all headgum day.
Yeah, there's two reasons for what you say that both resonate. The first is the reason that you and Scott yesterday, and I appreciate you giving Scott credit. I happen to agree.
No.
I agree with your evaluation of Scott. I would not agree with your evaluation of yourself. You get more positive accolades on this program than anyone, including myself. In fact, especially considering me. So your contribution is greatly valued. But you're right. Scott is terrific. There are two reasons that we should be desirous of knowing everything we can know about Yahweh's willingness to bless, to lift up in love. And one of those is because the world as we know it is disintegrating at an ever-escalating rate, and the problems are pervasive. They are absolutely and unequivocally irresolvable, and that America and the world are in a death spiral, and that these problems aren't just economic problems. They aren't just religious problems. They aren't just political problems. They aren't just indoctrination and lack of education problems. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a combination of everything, lack of education, lack of constructive, rational thinking and decision making, complete dishonesty in politics, the destructive nature of militaries, the deteriorating condition of economies, all of this collectively, and of course the Islam red in tooth and claw. All of these things, any one of which would absolutely and unequivocally destroy the world as we know it, all collectively cannot be stopped. And we within a matter of 15, I would say, let's use the Yahweh's timeline. Within 10 years, life as we know it is over. That is the bottom line.
Yeah.
By 2026, life on this planet as we know it is completely over. There will be 7 years that follow that will be hellacious. And so you would think that people would be interested in knowing how one comes to know the will of God and how one becomes the center of his attention so that they receive the benefits of knowing and engaging with God. Because there is no human solution here. It's not going to come from a political party. It's not going to come from a military. It's not going to come from an economic system. It's not going to come from a religious faith. There is no solution for man. Man, all of man's institutions are leading us in the wrong direction. And so the only hope is from Yahweh. So you think you'd want to know from that point of view. The second is, who, Kirk, is Yahweh blessing? Who is he asking Aaron to bless?
Oh, well, obviously, is Israel.
Right, the children of Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Period. He states it twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bani Israel, the children of Israel. Twice, of those individuals who engage and endure with God.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Yahweh not only willing, but engaged, desiring to bless Israel and talking about the specific ways that he is going to bless the children of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the rest of the world, including the leader of the United States, trying to destroy it.
Right.
So understanding this divide, I would think, would be relatively important, if you're an American in particular.
I never viewed America as being so wholeheartedly immoral as we are. I mean, I didn't know. They don't even respond to anything.
No.
I mean, it didn't even come up in conversation half of the time.
No, I think at the leadership levels, militarily, religiously, politically, economically, America is immoral. I think at the rank and file level, just the American citizenry, that most Americans are amoral. Now, I'm not to say that there isn't a great immoral swath or vein that pumps hard through the heart of most Americans that is immoral. But I think that you could say that most Americans have just been rendered amoral, incapable of moral
any type of rational thought. I mean, it just they can't see it if you lay it right there. I mean, it's just like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, when you're in a world where you're entitled to opinions, and you think that that's a meaningful statement,
mm-hmm.
if you're in a world where you identify with a political party or with a religious faith, then you are, and also if you are a product of America's educational institutions, and you define yourself as I'm a graduate of so-and-so, or I'm a member of so-and-so political party, or I'm a part of this religious faith,
mm-hmm.
then the high likelihood is, and it would probably be in 99.9% of those who identify themselves in any one of those three categories, that they have literally relinquished the ability to be judgmental. And that evidence and reason do not resonate with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that all they're going to do is spout indoctrinations and platitudes. You know, it's Yahweh who in Chabaouk said, you know, they chide me with their platitudes, with their citations that are truncated and taken out of context. And that's really all they're going to do, because they've lost the ability to this. They will listen to, like, SRN News. SRN News is a Christian institution. And the spokesperson for SRN News made exactly the same blunder as the journalist, if we can use that term, for the BBC in reviewing the White House's chiding of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Called it that the problem was that they were antagonistic towards Arabs. The Jews in Israel isn't antagonistic towards Arabs at all. In fact, the issue isn't Arab. It's Islam. But SRN News couldn't make that distinction. The White House didn't make that distinction. They call it a Palestinian or Israeli-Palestinian conflict when it isn't. It's a Muslim conflict against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They use the term two-state solution. Every aspect of what SRN did in coverage said that its reporters have foregone the ability to understand evidence and reason, to use what can be known about Islam what can be learned from history, what can be known to make rational conclusions, to use evidence and reason. And they've all foregone that ability. It's Yahweh actually says that there's predicting this time and human condition. He says their conscience, their nesalma, has been seared. We've given up the ability to think rationally. We were given a great tool, a conscience, to evaluate between, to discern, to judge between right and wrong, good and bad. And collectively, it's been drummed out of us.
I just find it so difficult to understand how that can happen. I mean, just, I know it did, and I can cite half of the reasons why, but I just can't wrap my brain around. I'm just befuddled.
Yeah, and you know, in this regard, Kirk, it's something that that long ago I took the time to study, because I wanted to understand how that could have happened in mass throughout Europe, throughout the United States, and really throughout the world. How it could happen, why it would happen, because people are giving up the thing that is most valuable to them, their ability to be observant and to process that which they come to observe in a thoughtful, rational way so as to exercise free will and choice in a beneficial manner. That's what they've given up. So who was behind this worldwide forfeiture of common sense, of being reasoned, logical, of being observant? And I came to the conclusion that it was part of a control mechanism by those in charge to continue to perpetuate their control over the masses. And that there's really only two ways to control the vast preponderance of people. One is through constant indoctrination. You just tell them, you give them bad information, you know, and then computers says garbage in, garbage out, you know, for a computer processor.
Sure.
Garbage in, garbage out. In the Soviet Union, when it was the Soviet Union, and throughout every Islamic country now, people are only exposed to that which is not true. They're lied to through propaganda incessantly. And so all the information that they have available to them is faulty. It doesn't matter if they think or not. The information's invalid. What do you have to process? So, Kirk, it's easy to see that in a country where there was the capacity, at a time in a country where there was the capacity to control access to information.
Sure.
Let's take the Europe under the control of Roman Catholicism for the better part of 1,000 years. They controlled people's access to information. You could not have a copy of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
No.
It was penalty of death. You could only get in Latin the church's view of those things. And so they controlled access to information. The leaders told you what they wanted you to hear. And if you're only given rubbish to process, no matter how good your processor is, you're going to get garbage out. But the world changed, at least for many people, with the advent of the Internet. And, you know, when Yosha said the entire world is going to hear the truth, his about him as the beneficial messenger and the healing message, when he spoke of that, and he said that the entire world is going to hear it during these last days, the very thing he's talking about is the Internet.
Sure.
This is not Christian missionaries. This is programs like this that are explaining what Yahweh actually shared. So now, with the exception of most of the, with much of, not most of, but much of the Islamic world, where they're so impoverished they don't have access to smartphones and computerized Internet devices. But many people do. For example, the highest readership of Prophet of Doom anywhere in the world is in Iran.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So Muslims in Iran know that Islam is rotten to the core. So in a world where you no longer can control access to information, I mean, the Chinese are trying their best in terms of limiting access to some internet sites. The U.S. Department of Defense precludes viewing Prophet Doom, for example, because it explains who the enemy actually is and why.
First time you said that blew me away.
Yeah, it's banned by the U.S. Department of Defense. So what you have is now, for the most part, people around the world have access to the truth. Now, you've got to filter out a lot of rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the number one user of internet bandwidth is Netflix for movies. You know, that's not going to help you any.
No.
And my guess is that the second most prolific use of the internet would be for pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to filter out a lot of rubbish. And there are a lot of numbskulls out there touting their agenda. But if you're willing to filter out the rubbish, and the filter happens to be in the Salma, it's your conscience, your ability to be discerning. You can filter out the rubbish, the information is there. So what do the elitists do to keep people from knowing the truth, to being able to thoughtfully conclude that militaries and economic schemes and politicians and religions are misleading them? And that's where political correctness comes in.
Yeah.
What does political correctness at its heart attempt to do?
Badger anyone who doesn't toe the party line.
Right. If you exercise good judgment and you discriminate between right and wrong,
you're ostracized.
Then you are ostracized, man. You can't have a job in education. You can't have a job in politics. You can't have a job in the military. You can't be ordained and have a congregation religiously. If you don't toe the party line, and if you don't play within the auspices of political correctness, you're crucified. You're humiliated. You're slandered. You're attacked viciously. And so what they've done is they've made it, they've indoctrinated people so that they are no longer willing to be judgmental. That's the nature of political correctness. And they have indoctrinated them on alternatives that are considered moral when they're not. And then on top of that, they have created a considerable pain, anguish, for those who are willing to exercise good judgment so that people are discouraged from doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because accurate information is now available. If you're willing to invest the time and you're willing to discern between what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, great example, Yahweh's name, it appears throughout this this text. If you're not discerning, but you make a half-hearted effort to validate what we're saying in terms of Yahweh's name is written 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, including multiple times in this passage.
Right.
And you Google it, God's name, 99% of the sites that you will look up will have information that is absolutely and demonstrably untrue. And so you really got to work to know the truth. You have to be able to discriminate truth from lies. So, Kirk, the name Yahweh is a great example. I imagine that most of us have at one time said, you know, where it says the Lord here throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and some people said, you know, God's got a name, and you find some people using Yahweh, and you say, mm-hmm. You know, where do they get that?
Yeah.
You know, I would guess that I haven't done a systematic survey, but based upon my prior experience, I would guess that the first 99 out of 100 sites you would go to would mislead you. They would say that God has many names when he doesn't. He only has one. They would say that the Lord or God is a name for God when both are in fact titles.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell you that while Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, YHWH, appears in the Hebrew Old Testament, there is no Old Testament, and there is no YHWH. There's a Yod, a He, a Wah, and a He.
Mm-hmm.
They will tell you that no one knows how to pronounce those letters.
Yeah.
And that the Jews, out of great respect for the name, don't say it. But neither of those statements are true.
Well, I did pre-computer.
Okay.
Because I didn't really go to the computers, but even the books, okay. They pretty much say, the books will say, like, the names of God. They will say his name was Yahweh or Yahweh and or the YHWH, and then they would say, but we transliterated it to Jehovah, and then we have Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah this, Jehovah, and on and on and on. Yeah. And it's not really important because, you know, and
the
so they go religious. That route, and then they write a whole book about every name other than his name.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And last time I checked, his name was spelled with three letters. That's one's repeated.
Uh-huh.
That are part of the 22 letters that are the Hebrew alphabet. Mm-hmm. Are we to believe that no word with any or all of those three letters cannot be pronounced in Hebrew? That the alphabet for Hebrew was really just a waste of time because it couldn't. No word formed with any of those letters could actually be read.
Well, that just becomes such an absurd supposition. I mean, you just laugh. You just go.
Right. Yeah, so if you go to the 99% of the sites that are going to mislead you, if you're not discriminating, you can be dumbfounded. But if you're thinking, you realize, wait a minute, what they're telling me is stupid. What they're telling me is so ridiculous as to be preposterous, particularly, you know, when someone tells you that one of God's names is God, and you say, wait a minute, God's not a name, it's a title.
No.
And it's really, no matter where you go in this regard, you're dealing with the need to be discerning, to be judgmental. Otherwise, you can't differentiate between those who are misleading you and the one who is telling you the truth.
You have to go through a lot of chaff, don't you, getting the wheat?
Yes. You know, I'm constantly asked to recommend my favorite translation of the Torah, and I said, I don't got one. Sorry, I there isn't one that I can recommend because there's way too many errors in all of them. And they'll say, well, what resource would you recommend? Well, I can't recommend one resource. And if I recommend, you know, 10 resources, then what you have to do is to say, then you've got to put on your filter.
Yeah.
And you've got to use many resources and be willing to filter out that which is misleading from them to derive at a common denominator, which is the truth. And, you know, there's only one way to do it, and that's to be willing to invest the time to be observant, to examine the evidence, and then to process it in a judgmental way.
Yeah. And it's not hard, it's just time-consuming.
Correct.
It's not, it should be great fun. I mean, if you're trying to get on the lifeboat, you wouldn't have any problem doing it. I mean,
No. If you're, you know, it's kind of funny.
Let's say you're
in an airplane and the pilot had a heart attack, and now you're at the controls, and your life depends on your ability to get this airplane safely on the ground. If somebody handed you an emergency checklist, would you read it?
I think I would too.
But if you knew you were going to be in that situation for certain at some time in your future, before you found yourself in that situation, would you read the owner's manual?
Yeah, you might do that.
Well, since we all know that we're going to be in that situation in life, it's 100% guarantee that we're going to be in that situation in life. And since there is an owner's manual on how to operate all of the wonderful options of human life, why is it so few people read it?
Just don't care, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this passage we're considering is from the owner's manual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Torah is Yahweh's owner's manual. Be misled here. It's not the owner's manual in the sense of he owns us. It's the owner's manual in the sense of that we own our own lives. We are responsible for our own lives. This is our soul is ours. We own our soul. And so if you read the Creator's manual on how to get the most out of your soul, to maximize your soul's life, your soul's functionality, your soul, the enjoyment of your soul. If you've got the authorized manual from the individual that created and designed your soul and the universe that it operates in, wouldn't you think that you should take ownership of your soul and read it?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we have. That's what the Torah is.
Right. Even in the verses that we're covering, the blessing is in the words.
Correct.
It's not like it's a blessing. Okay, I'm gonna have a windfall of money, or I'm gonna live in a better house, or you know, like the Christian point of view, I'm blessed because I'm healthy and I, you know, got a new job.
You know, that's powerful. But you're right.
Absolutely.
The blessing is not just in the words. The blessing is the words.
Yeah.
Because first of all, Yahweh is indistinguishable from His word.
Right, and John keeps saying that. You know, nobody listens to that either.
No.
For Yahweh Kanan.
Yeah, Yahweh Kanan. Absolutely, He begins it. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. So yes, the very nature of Yahweh is depicted in His word. You know, a lot of people have rejected the words that Yahweh stated that I translate and comment on in Yada Yah and the yadayah.com or introtogod.org. And they'll say, you know, if God's going to have to prove Himself to me for me to believe Him. And I said, well, you know, I've met Him. I know Him. And I've met Him, and I know Him because He and His words are indistinguishable. You want to see Him, then observe Shamar, His Torah teaching. And you'll see Him as clearly as words allow. You'll have an absolute and clear depiction of who He is, of what He wants, of what He's offering, of how to capitalize on what He's offering, of how to get the most enjoyment and longevity and functionality out of your soul. Yeah, it's all there. And it's all there in the words.
Exactly.
So,
absolutely true.
Yeah, and yet, the vast preponderance of people, you'd have to say that the number is probably in the range of all but one in a million, even bothered to consider His words. But, you know, folks, you should all view yourself as about to take a plane ride where you are going to be put in that cockpit and your survival and the survival of those you love is wholly dependent on you having read and acted upon the owner's manual, the pilot's operating handbook. And in this case, the pilot's operating handbook for your soul and its eternal journey is the Torah. So let's just return, if we can, Kirk, to what Yahweh had to say. And, you know, it begins with, and Yahweh, He elected to speak the eternal word to influence as God, Moshe, the one who draws us out, to approach by saying, speak to prompt a decision. To Aaron. Now, speak to promise to prompt a decision is from Dabar, the Hebrew word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron means enlightened free will, which is essential to this, as is Moshe's name, to draw out, because Moshe was drawing us out from the most religious and political place on earth, just as Aaron is the symbol for the spoken word of Yahweh, and therefore for enlightened free will.
Right.
And to his sons, to draw near by communicating. This is the fourth time Yahweh has done what you pointed out, Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth time he said, the blessing that follows is in the words.
All right.
Word, 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 word. You know, Amar can mean promise, it can mean answer, and it can mean spoken word. Dabar means word as a noun and means to speak words as a verb.
Right.
They've both been used twice. To draw near by communicating, this demonstrative frame of reference, the use of ko there is so important. The open hand welcoming those who reach up to God. who pay attention. You should always bless, benefiting by lifting up in love, positively and eternally influencing accordingly the children of Yisrael by saying to them. So who is the blessing for?
It's for the children of Yisrael.
And Yisrael is individuals.
And who engage
and
strive, endure, engage with Yahweh, or Yahweh, God.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's the frame of reference here. That's really important. Your frame of reference, your perspective on all of this is the way to lift up in love, to positively and eternally influence accordingly the children of Israel, is to say these words.
And anyone can be a child of Israel. Can be a
betcha.
Israel.
I'm an Israeli.
Yes. And I'm not Jewish either. So.
Yeah, I'm not Jewish ethnically. Israeli. I'm most certainly not Jewish religiously. But I'm an Israeli. And happy to be one. Because I engage and endure with God, which is what Yish individuals, Sarah, to engage and to endure, to strive with, El, God, means. Meaning is always in the names. So this says that Yahweh was speaking to Moshe and asking him to speak, to prompt a decision to Aaron and to his sons to draw near by communicating this demonstrative frame of reference. You all should always bless, benefiting by lifting up in love, positively and eternally influencing accordingly the children of Yisrael by literally saying to them. By having Amar follow this, once again, we find that the blessing is in the words. The words literally conveyed is where the blessing is found. And the blessing is found for Yisrael, anyone who chooses, based upon Yahweh's covenant, to become someone who reaches out to him in this way, responds to him in this way. Kirk, you know when Jacob became Yisrael?
Yes.
You're familiar with the story of how Jacob became Israel?
Yeah.
That it was when he demonstrated his affinity for Yahweh, his choice over for the covenant and for knowing Yahweh and engaging with him over the offers of Hasatan, the adversary.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became the living embodiment of Yisrael, because he was named Yisrael. And the covenant is constantly, Yahweh constantly says, the covenant is established with and affirmed with Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob. He says, I am the God of Abraham, of Yishak, and of Jacob.
Right.
And he named Jacob Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you put those things together, and you realize that Yisrael is a metaphor for the covenant.
The covenant, right.
As is, by the way, Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Abraham means merciful father who enriches. Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And Yishak means laughter, which is the purpose of a wonderful family relationship, is to enjoy one another's company.
Absolutely.
And Jacob means to dig in your heels.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to walk upright, steadfast, in a straight line, not wandering off from one side to another from the path that Yahweh has provided to us. And Yisrael are individuals who are empowered by God, who are enriched by God, who engage with God, who strive with God. So it's all of these things are synonymous, and yet the benefit of all of these things, the means to them and the benefit, the blessing, is all in the words. You can bless Israel by literally saying to them. And, Kirk, we've been over this before, but the first thing is probably the single most important in terms of perspective. It says that Yahweh, he wants to kneel down in love to continually bless you, desiring to lift you up forever for your benefit.
Right. Pretty impressive.
Yes.
Yahweh's going to do that.
Right. Yeah. Did he say to be blessed, you need to kneel down in submission to me?
No, sir.
No.
Afraid not. No.
Did he say, to be blessed, you need to be religious?
No, that's not in there either.
To be blessed, you need to avoid eating pork.
No, he didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that, did he? He said that my desire, my intent is God, is to kneel down in love to lift you up. That's how I'm going to bless you. That's how I'm going to demonstrate my love for you, is I'm going to kneel down to lift you up. That's what I want to do. And then he says he's decided to actually and continually focus on you. What do we find throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms? Is Yahweh focused on Persia?
No, not unless it's engaged with his people. He doesn't even, he didn't seem to care.
Right. Is he focused on Babylon, or unless it's to rebuke them?
Not unless it is, that's the only scenario.
Does he care about Egypt fighting the Hittites?
No.
No. Does he care about the history of Egypt apart from the time that Egypt was oppressing Israelites?
Is of absolutely no interest to him.
Right. In fact, the rest of the world is of no interest to him unless they're engaging in a negative way against Israel. His comments on Rome were all directed to Rome's beastly attitude, vicious attitude towards Israel.
You mean like America?
Yeah, exactly. There is but one country that Yahweh cares about. It is Israel, and only others when they're like America and trying to sacrifice Israel, working against it. That's why this message is so important for all of us. We'll be with you at this time tomorrow. May God bless.